Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, you're tuning in to Pixelated Conversations with your host, Neo and Sadie Avandre. We're excited to share with you from week to week our thoughts and feelings on Second Life, gaming, and just life in general. Tune in and make sure that you're able to add your input to the conversation. You can always call in to speak with us during our broadcast at 914-205-5677. Again, 914-205-5677. We are excited to do this show with you, and we can't wait. See you in the show. Hey, what's poppin'? Hope y'all having a good day. It's your boy Neo Avandre, aka Kenny Green. I'm Kenny Green in real life, but I portray Neo Avandre. One second. Super excited today. So today we're talking about, is there room for politics on Second Life? Oh gosh. Oh, it is the hot button topic. Hot button topic. Politics. Don't nobody like to talk about politics. I know, I don't like to talk about politics. I hate talking about politics. I really do. And I hate this season that we're in. It is, you know, political season. If you, just letting you guys know, if you guys want to call in, feel free to call in at 914-205-5677. That is the call-in number where you can call and be heard. Let your opinion be heard, y'all. This is, you know, we just chilling and having a conversation. So I'm gonna get the elephant out the way, the elephant in the room, out the way. Probably everybody wants to know, who I'm supporting. Alright, so this is a very interesting question, because I have to break it into two parts, alright? The way that I approach Second Life, I approach it as my character. My character on Second Life does things differently than my real life person, who I am in real life. I'm completely different than who I am in real life. My character on Second Life is a wealthy businessman. Very wealthy businessman, and so who my character would support in game is going to be different from who I do. My character in game is what I will call bougie. My character's bougie. Very, very bougie. be the first one submitted. Very, very bougie person. So my character probably would support Donald Trump. I know, boo. I know. Y'all probably hate it. Boo. Donald, boo. Boo. I know that y'all probably thinking that. And real life Kenny just wanted to smack himself for saying that. because real life Kenny is definitely a Joe Biden man. But my character, because he's wealthy, he's a wealthy businessman, it makes more sense for him as a character to support the Donald. And the reason being, Donald is a wealthy businessman. Donald is protecting the interests of businessmen. And so, if this is a role play question, like if you walked up on Neo of Andre in game and you're like, who you with? Neo would probably be like, yo, I like Biden, love Biden, but I'm supporting Donald because he's better for my pocketbook. But that's in character. Now, out of character, that's Kenny Green. We're separating Kenny Green from Neo of Andre. Neo of Andre is my second life persona. Kenny Green is who I am in real life. So let's separate it. Cut that, separate it. Real life Kenny Green is definitely a Joe Biden man. Real life Kenny Green is not balling. I do own a small business, but it is not big enough to receive any benefit from the Donald. I really don't believe that Donald is looking out for my interests. I do not believe that he is a good president. This is my personal feelings. And so, personally, I support Joe Biden all day, every day. And a lot of people are like, oh, you support Joe because you're black and you picked a black running mate. And that's not true at all. I'm glad that you picked Kamala. I think Kamala is a wonderful choice. And I think that she will do a wonderful job as vice president. And I even think that Kamala could be a good president someday. A lot of black people don't like Kamala because of how tough she was as a district attorney on black men. Okay. I believe that the justice system should have grace. I believe that we should have grace. However, there must be justice as well. Because if we just have a lot of grace, if we have a softy heart, softy attitude, so to speak, towards whatchamacallit, if we have, you know, salty attitudes and whatnot, then, you know, if we do evil things, and what I mean by salty attitudes, if we do evil things, if we commit crimes, and there's no punishment for it, and we commit crimes, there's no punishment for it, there's no deterrence to keep people from committing crimes again. There's no at all. There's no deterrent. And so we definitely need law and order. And she was law and order. She was about that. And so a lot of people, oh, she sent young black men to jail. And like I said, I believe there should be mercy in our justice system, but I also believe that there must be law. And her job as a district attorney is not to be nice to everybody. Her job is to apply the full measure of the law, to argue a case, and if win, to pursue punishment for conviction of crime. That was her job. I could see if she was, you know, a defense counsel or stuff. You know, no, she was a prosecutor. That's what prosecutors do. Y'all watch Law and Order. Y'all know. Y'all see Law and Order. They be trying to throw the book at some of these cats. And some of the cats need the book thrown at them. There are, has to be maneuverability in the law. There has to be grace. There has to be mercy. But there also has to be justice. We have somebody on the line. I'm going to go ahead and pull them on. We have 612-545-6103. Go on ahead and what's your name and what are your thoughts about all of this? What's your name? What are your thoughts on all of this? You are live online.
Yes,
612-545.
Yes, good afternoon, man. Thanks for taking my call. My name is Mike. I was hoping to talk about the issue of mail-in voting and how it's set up for basically, you know, the election to get screwed with.
Yeah, I'm definitely down for that conversation. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I just think that the reason that the Democrats are pushing so hard for mail-in voting is because they know that they're going to use it to take advantage of the election. Because if you look at the rules they put in place, it's designed to create windows of opportunity within 36 hours after the election, where ballots can still be counted if they're received even after the election day, as long as they're postmarked prior to it. But they said they can't have ballots that don't have the actual postmark date or the date's not readable or something wrong with it. And those can still be counted as long as they're in there in the post office within 3 days of the election. So to me, when you put rules like that on the table, that lets me know, oh, what you want to do is you want to see how things are going and then be able to ballot stuff when you know the number's coming in on November 3rd. So, you know, it's they're obviously going to try to steal the election. It's pretty clear.
So, and I get you. I get what you're saying on that, and that's definitely an interesting point and an interesting perspective that you bring up because, you know, the mail-in ballot system is not perfect in any sort of means. It's definitely one of the things that are broken about our election system. However, I'm not too quick to throw the baby out with the bathwater because I know that there are some individuals who are sick and shut in and because of situations and circumstances beyond their control can't necessarily make it to the polling station to actually drop in a vote. So what are your thoughts on those individuals? Because, I mean, I get what you're saying, how you feel that the Democratic Party could use this as a way to steal the election away from President Trump. But so I get what you're saying. But on the other hand, how do we address the people that can't necessarily make it to the polling stations to vote? How do we... What are your thoughts and ideas on making sure that their voices are included, because just because they can't make it to a polling station to vote doesn't it disqualify them from, you know, being American, and from, unless they're criminals, unless they've committed the crimes and whatnot and they can't vote or whatnot. But as long as they're in right standing with the law, they should be able to vote. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I'm actually in that category as well. I usually am not able to vote in person because I travel for work. And so people in that category, they have what's called absentee ballots. And so what an absentee ballot is, basically you file, you register, you give them your address, and they'll send a ballot to you in the mail, and you can just vote, essentially like voting by mail, right? So most people, like if you're sick and you can't go, or if you're out of town or out of the country, you can vote by mail. They've had that for years. I do that almost every election for the last couple of years. So that option is always there. That's never gone anywhere. What the Democrats are trying to do, on the other hand, is they're trying to replace all, like, instead of anybody going to the ballot to vote, they want to send just mail everything out. So we're talking about like 120 million votes by mail. That's what they want to do, which that's crazy. And anyone who thinks that that's going to be legit, I don't know. I don't know where's the logic that makes you think that that won't be messed with or tinkered with, especially when you think about states like Michigan that was decided by, I think, about 16,000 votes. Wisconsin, the same thing happened there, where Trump won that state by a really narrow margin. Same thing in Pennsylvania. And those three states really determined the election. So if you're talking about, let's say, Pennsylvania all of a sudden is within 10,000 votes, and you're a Democrat working in Philadelphia, and you find out, oh, that's the margin, hey, all of a sudden in the post office, oh, look at all these ballots we just found. You see how the game works? Because I used to work in the DNC, where I'm from, in Minnesota. So I know what Democrats think. I know their game. I know their arguments. Because you know voter ID? You ever heard of that?
Yeah, I have.
All right, so in almost every other country in the world, everyone has to show their ID when they vote. Almost everywhere. Only in America is one of the few countries that you don't have to present an ID when you vote. And the Democrats rejected that, and they claimed that it was racist to have people, require people to have ID when they vote. And which is a joke, because as a black man, that's an insult. They're saying that a black person is too much to ask of them to have some form of government ID, which is any adult who functions in society has to have an ID. But that's beside the point. They brought that point up because they want to leave the door open for fraud. It's the same thing they do with illegal immigration, right? They say they're against illegal immigration, but they don't tighten up the loopholes, right? They leave the border open. They leave certain loopholes in the law. You see, this is the game the Democrats play. They have a front of, oh, we're above board and we want things legit, but don't you dare change any rules or laws or any things in place that would actually close any doors for any illegality to happen. You got to keep it open. That's how they play it. And the general public, because they don't know the game, they fall for it, and the Democrats are able to do their stuff under the table. And so they're doing the same thing now. They're putting up this front like, oh, mail-in voting is about the COVID cases and people scared to go out and all that. It's bullshit, and everybody should know that. They are worried because they know Joe Biden is a bad candidate. They know that. And they know that Trump is popular in the key swing states they need to win. They know he's popular in Michigan. They know he's popular in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania. They know that. All the insiders know that. They may not say it in public or in the media. Anyone who works within the DNC, they know this as a fact. They're worried about it. And they know those states are going to be close. So they want something in place that can help them work around that and find a way to cheat and be able to win. That's what's going on. And people need to wake up to it, man. Stop falling for the BS.
I mean, I think that 100% mail ballot would be a bureaucratic nightmare. I think that it's definitely easier to tinker with paper than it is, say, you know, electronic. I mean, I know that was one of the biggest complaints in the last election. They thought, you know, people said that Russia messed with our elections electronically, but messing with paper, I mean, it's easier to, you know, change something on paper than it is in a computer. So I get where you're coming from. I think that you have a valid point. I do like your point as far as showing ID to vote. I do. I understand. I think that it is bull crap. that that the DNC, and I will be honest, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I'm an independent. I vote according to my interests and my beliefs and my morals. And but to say that Americans can't obtain ID, or that it's racist to expect Americans to obtain ID, if people are here legally, if they are legal United States citizens, I don't know any legal United States citizen that is in this country that doesn't have an ID or a driver's license. I can't cash a check without ID.
Exactly.
I don't drive. I don't drive. My wife drives. I don't drive. But I can't cash a check without an ID. I can't conduct business at a bank without an ID.
You can't live in America without an ID. I don't know how else anyone can live
ID.
Without one. Right.
And I
remember, the Democrats say that it's racist against black people. They said for black people, it's racist to expect black people to have an ID when they vote. That's their argument. You can look it up. I mean, as a black person myself, that's an insult to me to think that it's too much of us to get an ID, which is like saying we're retarded.
I'm a black man. I don't know any black people that don't have a friggin' ID. I mean, I'm just saying. I don't know any.
I had a debate with a Democratic congressman, and the Democratic congressman, I think he was from North Carolina. He was black as well. And he was making that argument. And I was saying to him, as a black man, how can you argue that it's too much to expect of your own people to have an ID? And I told him, don't you realize that they're just using us and making us look bad to justify their own, evil idea that they're trying to concoct here? And I'm like, I told him, aren't you ashamed that you're literally denigrating your own people to justify this political position? And I don't know how he didn't see it. Because it's an insult to us to let them make that argument. Because it's like saying, as white people, we're so dumb and we can't operate, that to expect us to get an ID, oh my God, it's blatant racism. I mean,
it is.
I don't know. As a black person,
I
got upset when I heard that, and I couldn't believe a black politician actually made that argument. It'd be one thing if a white person made that argument, but for a black person to make that argument, it's like, it blows my mind.
It is mind blowing, because even people that are black that might have difficulties, mental difficulties, they might be illiterate, they might be developmentally disabled or whatnot, I still know that they have people around them that help them to obtain identification. I mean, you can get held in jail for a certain amount of hours for identification purposes if you're walking around the streets without an ID. At least here in Colorado, where I reside, if you don't have an ID and the police say they pull over your car and you're in the car and you don't have ID, but they suspect that maybe you might have committed a crime, or they want to verify who you are and you don't have an ID, they can hold you. I forget the amount of hours, but they can actually hold you in the jail to verify your identification, to verify who you are. So I know everybody that I know, every black person I know. Heck, I'm talking about even to my Mexican brothers and sisters out there that are here in America. As long as they're here in America legally and legit, they got ID. And even some of the ones that are not here legally are obtaining IDs. So to not...
Right.
To have that stipulation to where you, I think that you should have an ID to vote. I think that your identity should absolutely be verified, because there are certain terms and conditions that void a person's right to vote.
That's true.
I'm not going to act like I'm the most
literate.
But you
got to remember, the Democrats can't allow that to happen, because they win. The way they win is by messing with votes and doing all this stuff under the table. There's a long history of this. It's well documented in both Chicago and Philadelphia, the long history of voter fraud done by Democrats. That's how they operate. And so they know they need that, because if you think about it, most of their arguments are bad. And I say this as a former Democrat, right? Their arguments are based on making an emotional appeal to someone, which is why most liberals are primarily women and young people. You know, the type of people that can get that can be swayed by an emotional argument. But when it comes to logic and reason and debating it and putting it under a microscope and weighing the pros and cons, their ideas fall apart every time. That's why people that are older or more men oftentimes are more conservative, because older people and men think more logically, whereas women and younger people think more emotionally, which is where the liberals, that's the only way they can, their ideas can be accepted. It's convincing you by your emotions to accept this idea that's illogical, but because it hits you emotionally, you're just going to give into it. That's how they work. And so because of that, they have a limited number of people they can actually get in a certain area. So they have to then use different, you know, maneuvers behind the scenes, backroom stuff, under the table stuff to try to make sure they win, which is why they fight to keep loopholes open. And by the way, this is why they're so against Trump when it comes to illegal immigration, because the Democrats' plan is to legalize every illegal immigrant in this country, get them the right to vote, and then you can then bypass the traditional American voter. You just gain potentially 15, 20 million new voters, and we're gonna have a one-party rule in this country. That's what their plan is, flat out. And so I'm amazed that any logical, critical thinking person in America in 2020 would consider voting Democrat. To me, is saying you don't care what kind of country your children and your grandchildren are going to have. Because if these people come into power and they let their policies put in place, this country will collapse in 10 years, flat out, financially. Just do the numbers. There's no way any of these stuff they're proposing can be done without destroying the U.S. dollar and collapsing the federal government.
Wow. You know, I really...
It's just mad.
I really like your point of view on this, because, to be honest, on the immigration issue, and like I said, that's why I always tell people that I am an independent. I don't subscribe to a specific particular party, because there are certain things that I'm more liberal on than others. Morality issues, I'm definitely conservative. Immigration issue, I'm definitely conservative. I work with many people from, and they happen to be from like Iran, Iraq, Turkey, but who go through so much hardship to come over to America. I have had friends from Iran that had to go live in Turkey for 3 years and not be able to work in Turkey, because you can't work unless you're a Turkish citizen. So not being able to work, but they have to live there pretty much destitute or on their savings for 3 years while they're applying for the visa to come into the United States of America. And then they come to the United States of America, they learn the language, they learn the history, they learn the culture, they take all of the steps to become American citizens. They go on to be productive, great American citizens. They go on, they open up, one is a chef, one owns coffee shop, one owns auto dealership. They open up businesses, they pay taxes, they do it the right way. And I see that example every day because of all the people that I work around that immigrate to this country the right way. And I'm not saying that Mexico isn't a messed up place, because of the drug cartels and the narcos and things like that. It is a very dangerous, volatile, destitute place. And I understand the desire for the people that live there to want a better day for themselves, a better day for their children. I get that. I understand that. But I look at places like Iran, where some of my coworkers have come from, that, you know, no religious freedom. One of my, he's an ex-coworker, he went on to start a business, but his name was Fazi, and he was Baha'i, and he was tortured for 20 years in Iranian prisons for being Baha'i, for not being, I don't know if it's Shia Sunni Muslim that is ruling Iran, but for not being the right type of Muslim, he was tortured 20 years for being a Baha'i leader. He was on CNN doing an interview a couple of years back because of that. So other countries have it tough too. And if other people can immigrate here legally and do it the right way, then I believe that people in Mexico can do it the right way. The only reason why they don't is because of proximity. It's easier for them to jump a border because they're right next to us. Somebody in Iran can't
right.
jump a border over here to America like somebody from Mexico can. I like your point of view and perspective on that because I don't think that our political system is working like it should, but I think that we would be in sore trouble if it became a one-party country. If the Democratic Party was the only option that there was out there, Democrat or nothing else, that's it, I think that it would take away people's agency, it would take away people's ability and right to vote according to their conscience, and it becomes dangerously close to, like, Nazi Germany, you know, style dictatorship, fascism. And so I agree with on the immigration issues for sure. I'm taking it that you probably are a Trump fan, and I think that there are certain things that Trump has done that have been phenomenal. I do think that Trump has shown some leadership in some areas that, like I said, I think that he's done a phenomenal job in some areas. I think that there are some areas that he seriously needs to work on, especially representing us
most
all.
Most definitely.
Being the president and commander-in-chief means that you represent us. You represent the United
right.
States, the world. And there's some issues.
Yeah, I'm no Trump fan, by the way. I just want to be clear. I look at him as the lesser of two evils, right? I mean, if our choice was, you know, in 2016 it was between Hillary and him, you know, you basically got two bad options. So he was the lesser of two evils. You know, it's not like if there was a better option, I'd prefer that. Unfortunately, we haven't been given one even now. It's between him and Joe Biden. It's just like it's always a turd sandwich on what to get.
And I do see where you're coming from that, you know, the Biden campaign is trying to pull a lot of heartstrings, a lot of their advertising and spots and plugs are, you know, highlighting things like Corona or highlighting things like, you know, him losing his wife and children to death, different things like that to pull at the heartstrings. What are some issues that you personally believe that would make Joe Biden a terrible president if he happened to be elected in November?
Well, the first thing would be his mental state. I mean, I don't know if you've seen all the different videos online of, like, him with all these gaffes and not knowing where he is and just, you know what I mean, like, forgetting things or, like, losing his thought mid-sentence and stuff. The guy clearly is in mental decline. I mean, it's well documented. He's had two brain aneurysms. I think he's had a stroke. He's had all kind of issues. He's mentally not there anymore. It's obvious. That's beside the point. When it comes to his policies are terrible. The man wants to implement a massive government health care program. Now, I hear people say this all the time about, oh, we need government health care. It'll be free and it'll be great. We won't have to pay for health care. It's bullshit, people. You're going to pay for it. If you talk to anybody from Canada with their government health care, they'll tell you they take the money straight out of your paycheck. Sometimes it can be as much as, you know, hundreds of dollars a week to take directly out of your check without you, you know, before you even get your money. So it is not going to be free. We're all going to have to pay into it. So if anyone gives you this BS line about free health care, they're lying to you. There's no such thing as free health care. They're just going to have to implement massive taxes on the entire country. That's the only way, because it's going to cost, at minimum, you can look at the study, universal health care in America would cost at minimum $4 to $7 trillion a year. Not a decade, a year. That's nearly, in some cases, more than our entire federal budget is right now. So just to give you a context, right, the federal government spends about $4 to $5 trillion a year that they spend. they take in between $3 to $4 trillion in tax revenue. If you were to stick that universal health care program in, and now you're adding $4 to $7 trillion, and it'll be closer to $7 trillion, because anytime the government does any program, they always overspend. So let's just be nice and say $5 trillion. Now you've literally doubled the federal budget from $5 to $10 trillion. Now you've got to increase tax revenue, because tax revenue currently is about $3.5 trillion in tax revenue the government's taking in, which means you're going to have to at least potentially almost triple that to even come close to balancing the budget. Now, if anyone thinks that amount of money is only going to come out of corporations in the 1%, you're living in a fantasy world. They're going to get that money out of the middle class. They're going to get that money out of a massive federal tax, sales tax on everything. They're going to get that money by having a payroll tax that they're going to deduct straight from everybody's check. There's no way that system is going to be in place that every American that is working is not going to be paying into. Even if you're not working, you're going to feel it when you buy stuff, because they're going to have to put a massive sales tax in to even come close to paying for all that. And so this is why I say their ideas don't hold up when you scrutinize it and use logic and reason. You see, if you use an emotional argument, I say, wouldn't it be nice if we all could have free health care? Shouldn't we take care of everybody? Isn't that the right thing to do? See, that argument works on simple-minded, emotionally-minded people. When they think, oh, right. Yeah, that sounds nice. But when you get to brass tacks, you talk numbers, and you break it down, you realize this thing is completely impossible. And what's going to happen is if they did it, within a year, when everybody in the country feels the taxes that they have to pay, there's going to be a massive backlash, and everybody's going to demand to get rid of it. Just like what happened with Obamacare. Remember, Obamacare came in, they promoted it, they said it was this great thing. And what ended up happening, once it kicked in, people had to pay the mandatory tax every year if you don't have it. And then they had everyone's health care costs went up because of it. And once everyone felt the cost of Obamacare, within a year and a half, it became extremely unpopular around the country. And this is because their ideas, just some of their ideas are. They have bad ideas that they market well because they've got the majority of the media supporting them. For those who don't know, 85% of all news journalists are registered Democrats. 85%. Let that sink in.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Every late night talk show host on television. Yeah. Every late night talk show host on television you watch, I don't care if it's Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, whatever names you guys, all of them you can think of, Seth Meyers, the whole gauntlet, Bill Maher, go down the list. Every single one of them is a liberal. Every single one is a Democrat. You watch their shows, they literally are political propaganda shows where they make fun of the Republicans and they promote Democrats. Every one of them. You took Trevor Noah on the Daily Show on Comedy Central. Another one. Every Hollywood celebrity, every influencer, all of them, they're liberals. All of them, they're pro-Democrat. Almost, it's like 90% of them are. And you go down the list, and then you go into colleges. A lot of people don't notice, in universities in America, it's like 90% of all college professors, not even 90%, like 98%, last time I checked, are liberals. And it's like 45-50% of them are open communists. Dude, I'm not making this stuff up, man. These people have surrounded America through education and media. They use those two platforms to indoctrinate people, which is why so many young people in America are either liberal or like far left. And it's not because they came to that conclusion on their own. It's because they've been indoctrinated since their children through the media and through the education system, right? It's not until people usually don't become more conservative until they start to get older. They move out of, you know, they stop going to school. They, you know, they get more in the real world. They're not as influenced by what they see in television or in the media, and they start to think for themselves, which is why they become more conservative. But you can see what's being done in this country, and that's the reason why we got to the point now where a guy like Bernie Sanders is even taken seriously, even though the guy's a flat-out communist. It's because we've had 30 years of indoctrination going on in the country. And that's the reason why you see all these kids on the streets rioting and looting and going nuts and demanding that we abolish capitalism, because they have been brainwashed since they were children. you know? And I just, I really feel bad for this country, man, because my family immigrated here from a communist country. Most of my family was killed under communist government. And I literally am witnessing in America the rise of communism. And it's growing. And I don't think people realize what this is going to, if we allow this to continue and don't stand up and stop this now, I mean, I don't know how much longer we can wait. Our children and our grandchildren are screwed. They're going to live under an iron fist totalitarian government that's going to rule them under a massive tyrannical police state. If we don't wake up and do something now, we can't. This may sound hyperbolic, but it's the reality. If the Democrats ever get to the point now where they get the White House and they have the supermajority in the Senate and in the Congress, once they get that and they can actually pass their legislation, it's game over in this country. Because they will eradicate our rights and our freedoms, and they will put laws in place that will keep them in power and never allow anyone contrary to their view to come up and challenge them again. It'll be the end of our country. And so this election is so important right now, because we're at that crossroads. The Democrats have taken their masks off. They're coming out of the closet as communists. They're letting it be known. And so at some point, the reasonable, logical people in this country who actually appreciate America, appreciate the Constitution, understand why capitalism is better than communism, have to stand up and make a statement on November 3rd. Otherwise, our country is destroyed. You know, and it's the reality, man.
Wow. I wish I just had more time to talk with you, brother, because you have enlightened me to some things that I haven't seen. That I haven't realized, and things that I'm going to actually go fact check and think about and look at. I only have 3 minutes left in the podcast, but I want to thank you for calling in, because I think that your point of view is something that needs to be heard. And the reason being is, if we're going to make an informed decision when we head to the polls in November, we need to know all the facts. And that's why I'm very glad that you came and that you shared what you shared, because I'm going to, you know, check the factoids, and I'm probably going to be here next week at 10 o'clock a.m. and probably continue talking about it after I do my research this week, because you give me a lot to consider, and I hope that my listeners would do likewise, research it for yourself. I do believe that we are at a pivotal point in American history. I believe that this election is crucial. I think that we need to make the right decision and the right choices for this election, and I think that it's important that we do so, and I think that's important that we have all the knowledge and all the information in front of us when we do this, when we head to the polls, or when you fill out your mail-in ballot, however you're voting this year, have all of the facts, and that way, when you vote, you can vote with your conscience free and clear, and you can vote with your eyes wide open and not have them shut. I thank you so much. Yep, it's let me know that I got to get off. I thank you so much for tuning in and for listening, and thank you so much for that engaging conversation. And if you got time, I would love to have you back next week at 10 o'clock to continue this and to, you know, get into this further. I think that this is a crucial time in American society, and we need to understand, and we need to have all the facts in front of us. So, guys, thank you guys so much for tuning in.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you so much, brother, for sharing with us and for being with us. And we are going to be ending our podcast for this week. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week.